Welcome back. Another edition of Murder Gymnastics, a wrestling podcast. I am Carl, otherwise known as Mr. Meanie. Got the intro right this time. Yay! And over there on the screen, I can see him. He's there. He can see me. It's thrilling. It's my buddy Paul.
Winning!
You're winning at life? Is that what's going on? You're winning? Did you gamble? Well,
I hesitate to say winning at life because then something will swoop in and definitely prove me wrong.
Well, I can vouch for that coming from the COVID house over here. Jesus Christ. True. The club I did not want to join, and both my wife and I have spent 10 days just having COVID, I guess is what you say. Yay. It's good times. It's good times.
Yeah, I don't believe you.
You're still free, right?
Yeah, we're still in COVID household. Fuck.
That's a small club now. Like, it's getting smaller. Like, my dad and you and Melanie, that's it. That's all I know.
Yeah, Melanie rides the Petrie Express to work. So right? how the hell we avoided it, I have no idea.
And you've been to a wrestling show. We went to a wrestling show and got COVID. Yay!
Yay!
This is the first episode since I was at that show. So I'll try it not sure to bring. I won't get into too much details on the show because it was a house show. It was just super fun, except for the COVID part. But everything else about it was awesome. We had such a great time. First time going to a big event since COVID, and then get COVID. So many parallels with that night. It's kind of disturbing. But yeah, it was fun. It was because house shows are hands free from continuity. They can just do whatever they want. The matches were all half hour long. And they were hilarious. There was so much hijinks and hamming it up to the crowd and just being goofballs. And you could see it's like you're staying in character, but it doesn't matter because it's just for fun. You could see how much fun they're all having. It was really a good time. Margo, that was her first big wrestling show. So
nice. Yeah, that would create such a fun atmosphere. Like the AEW show I went to was super fun, but that was all quote unquote in continuity. But yeah, that would be so fun.
They're both fun because I've been to those shows too. They're just so structured. Yeah. You know? So these shows are neat. They're wild. Yeah.
Just playing in the sandbox or wrestling.
Exactly. We actually showed up late, which we never do. Well, we weren't late, but it took forever to get in. Like the line was massive. And by the time we got in, the show had started, which usually I hate that. But actually, I no longer like that anymore. In life, I don't want to be sitting in my seat just waiting for the show to start. We got there just after it began so we could hear the entrance musics of the first match. And then when we came through the curtain, it was like walking into like a movie. You know, in movies, they always get there late. No one's ever on time in the movies. They show up to a boxing match and it's already happening and the crowd is roaring. And that's what it was. We were like walked in and the lights were on and there were the chants. The fans were chanting, Sammy, Sammy. And we were like, it was so exhilarating. We got to our seats and we were both like buzzing. We're like, wow. Like it was kind of neat to come in right after it started. It was kind of cool. So
that is awesome.
Yeah. So anyway, that show was fun. But now we'll talk about, you know, the actual wrestling that counts.
that other people see.
We might as well start with, we never start with AEW. So we're just going to dive right in and talk about AEW because there's so much to talk about. It's hard not to talk about the big news and talk about the past first without talking about the big news, but we can just leave that for now. We'll talk. Yeah. We'll pretend that big thing didn't happen. And then it'll happen.
Long-term storytelling. We will build to it.
That's right. We're going to build.
The culmination. That'll be our main event.
The main event. Stay with us. There's big news coming. Trust us. Big news that you already know, but pretend you don't know for the sake of us. Okay.
Yeah.
So Collision is still awesome.
Yes.
It's still a great show. It's still fun. It's still goofy. It's still very entertaining. There's still only one women's match per week, which is driving me insane. If they don't start booking this division better, my head's going to pop. There's so many great women on that roster. I'm not just going to harp on this, but it's driving me a little crazy. Anyway, there's so many good talent. There's so much good talent there that I really wish they would get featured more than just once per show. But that's where we're at right now. So,
and it always seems to be the same four or five involved in it too.
It does.
Right?
Yeah, like, it does. Like, Willow Nightingale. That's her name.
Oh,
I really like her a lot. She's really good, but she should get more singles matches against other singles. There should be more singles women's matches instead of just six woman. And, you know,
I wonder if maybe there's more women matches on Dynamite, which we're not seeing. I don't know because
it seems like there's one.
Yeah,
every week.
Well, there was a title change that I found out afterwards. I'm like, oh,
right.
That was on Dynamite 200. Oh, okay. But yeah, it seems odd that they've got a talent like Taya Valkyrie and you never really see her.
You never see her.
Like you said, Willow Nightingale. Now, and granted, we don't know what their other commitments are.
Totally.
But it just seems really odd that they come in sporadically here or there, and it's kind of your core four performers. And I mean, you can only keep that interesting for so long. And they're great. I do really like the core four that we see, but
they got to give them something to work with, right? So
yeah, I agree.
But yeah, but they're doing the best they can. So that show had so funny because like it very much is the CM Punk show, which is mm-hmm. it's funny to say with our big news we're going to talk about later. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just it opens. It's always him, and you really get this feeling like I'm going to spoil a little bit, but it just really seemed like he was calling his own shots on that show. Like he was just like, I get to open it. I get to close it. I always look big. I always look great. I have my own title that nobody acknowledges. Like, it's just really like it's a bizarre situation that had to eventually result in something happening. So yeah. I could sort of sense something about it seemed weird, especially that no one was acknowledging that title belt.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like he was just doing it. Like, I'm just doing this. I don't care who says I can't do it. This is a fun story that I'm going to do. It just seems really weird to me, but it got big pops. Every time he comes out, it was the crowd always went crazy. Like you were there live, right? He gets a pop, whether I like him or not, doesn't matter. When the crowd gets that loud, I see why they were booking him. Backstage politics and bad locker rooms is another thing. We'll get there later. But
yeah, well, you know. And that's like anything, even in professional sports, you can have a shitty attitude, but that will only take you so far. That at some point the scales tip the other way and you may no longer be worth the headache. And
exactly.
And again, you likely know if you're listening to this anyways, but still. Yeah. And I agree, not having really seen CM Punk in his heyday, I was, you know, I could see how he was very charismatic and really worked the crowd. Is maybe a little more stiff and rigid now, but I mean, he's older, but yeah, like he knew he was a good performer, but
little stiff and rigid. Now that's Kipo.
Hit him in his little punk.
But
yeah, he's obviously a professional in the manner that he can perform and he can work a crowd. But he
just doesn't make a lot of friends apparently.
No.
So.
And I always wondered how legitimate any heat like with Samoa Joe and all that was, like, you know, they have the rivalry and it's, I just always wondered, is that loosely based in reality? Do they
I'm kind of thinking there's something there. Yeah, yeah, I'll share a couple things I learned on a podcast later. I'm glad they have guys like Ricky Stark on that show, so mm-hmm. he doesn't miss a beat as far as being the heel of the show, right? He's definitely the guy you can bring out if you want the crowd to get excited and then just start hating everything the guy's doing. Cause he does such a good job of just being really swarmy and irritating. And I really like what he's doing. I wasn't sure at first, cause I've never really known him to play this kind of character. This might be his first attempt at this. I don't know, but he's quite good at just these annoying looks. And I kind of want to slap him and choke him when he's out there too. So he does a really good job. And like in a good way, like I think he's just nailing it. He's doing a great job. I won't be cheering for him in that heel, you know, babyface kind of way, but he's doing a great job. I love Ricky Starks.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, he was that obnoxiousness that exactly you just, yeah, get your blood boiling. But yeah, I'm here for it.
I wondered if he had an injury that they weren't telling us about, because I found it very interesting that the storyline of him getting suspended for assaulting Ricky Steamboat, because that happened on the show. Mm-hmm. And then he gets suspended just in time for All In, like the biggest pay-per-view of all time as far as ticket sales go. And he's not able to participate because he's suspended. I was like, wow, either Ricky's really taking one for the team there and not participating in the show, or maybe he had something that was like, hey, maybe 4 weeks off is just what I need to, like, you know, I just thought it was really, I've never heard of a guy wanting to miss WrestleMania on purpose or something like that. It's not like he wouldn't have a storyline. It's not like he couldn't be featured in the second biggest match of the night, probably. So I was very surprised that he, like, I like that storyline. Like he got his manager's license and everything to skirt the rules. I love that. But it means, yeah, not wrestling at All In was like, wow, I'm surprised by that, you know? So,
and I don't even recall him making making an appearance. So maybe he was just unable to travel. And maybe that's
right because
why they pivoted to CM Punk versus Samoa Joe, because it seemed like they were really riding the coattails of this Ricky Starks CM Punk rivalry for a while. And then it just kind of out of nowhere, there was that pivot. Maybe that was planned all along, but it just kind of seemed
international show. Like maybe it was a travel problem, passport problem or whatever. You never know, right? It happens all the time. Becky Lynch is supposed to be in India tomorrow to wrestle, and she had a slight tear in her passport. And at the airport, sorry, Becky, even though she was one of the featured people going over for this big pay-per-view there, not allowed in the country because of your tear on your passport. So it's like shit.
Wow.
So, yeah, maybe that's what happened. It's hard to say. I'm sure he had to be disappointed to miss that show, but it's also being a professional and having Collision being basically you're featured on there. You're not exactly lacking for story and for like, you're getting a lot more screen time than a lot of people are, right? He knows that he's a feature player right now. He's out, Tony Schiavone and him are out there every week having a conversation. So
speaking of which, visible.
Do you like Tony? Do you like Tony as an announcer? I don't know. I don't know if I do. I think I kind of tolerate him. He kind of, I don't know if he needs to be in there when I think the guy could or girl could just have the mic and just rip a promo. I don't know that we need the old school, like, all right, so here and there and the mic. I don't know if we need that. Each week I watch it, I'm like, do we need Tony in there right now? I don't know if it's serving a purpose. He seems like he's just filling a space.
Well, they do something really interesting that I don't really dislike nor like. It's just observing that they do it, but it's kind of like how on certain matches they'll just bring out Jim Ross.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere. And I mean, I like Jim Ross. I don't have any issue with him, but it's just odd that you've got your main crew and then all of a sudden Jim Ross is there. And I don't know whether it's to make it feel more like a big main event, and I'm sure it's kind of like what NWA does where they're always like honoring their past, right?
Because
Tony Schiavone, obviously WCW, and
he's
a I never loved him nor disliked him. He was always just kind of that announcer on WCW. Yeah,
totally, exactly, right?
So he's not a draw nor somebody that pushes me away, but it's really interesting how it's just kind of out of the blue. And Tony's in the ring for a promo.
I just think Ricky could walk in the ring with a mic and just start talking, and it would be just as effective. I just don't think Tony's adding anything to the moment. It doesn't intrigue me at all that they're having a conversation. I'd almost rather just have the baby face or the heel with the mic, and then they can get interrupted by someone or whatever. But to me, having the announcer in there, it doesn't seem. And JR coming in, I'm going to tell you, I loved JR in the 90s. I don't need JR in 2023. He sounds like an old dude on the mic. He sounds like he's just there to say all his like sayings and stuff. Like I find it kind of cringe actually when he's doing, you know, all his slangs and his like talking about barbecue down. Like I'm just tired of it. It makes it seem so old when like everything else about that show has a retro feel, but seems so now. It seems so like current. And then JR comes out. I'm like, oh no, don't do this.
And their main announcers do a really good job.
Oh, like, really good job.
Like they all do it. So it almost stunts the momentum and the energy 100%. A little bit.
Yeah.
But as far as Tony in the ring, I really like Dasha, and she's the main ring announcer.
Oh, yeah, just she's great.
Have her say, oh, so-and-so asked for some mic time. Here you go. Like, involve her more. And she serves more of a purpose than he does. But, yeah, it has to just be nostalgia factor.
Yeah, I agree. So, because, I think, like, Nigel's amazing. The main guy that you liked before from New Japan. What's
Ian Riccaboni, he was on New Japan. He does TNT, but they seem to have swapped him out now.
Right. It's Kevin Kelly now. Right.
Yeah.
But he's doing a great job too.
Yeah. And that's fine if they have rotating per week or every couple weeks, depending on whatever engagements these guys have booked or whatever. But yeah, it just seems odd to me to have essentially guest spots for announcers.
And totally. It is strange. Guest referees, guest announcers, I guess that's what they're going for. So
yeah.
It's fine. Hey, we got Ricky Steamboat appearance. So that's, even though I didn't cheer for him when I was watching wrestling, when he was wrestling, because he was always the baby face and he was always against somebody I liked better. He's Ricky Steamboat. I can't say anything bad about him now. He's 70. He looks fantastic. And
boy, does he ever.
He can still get beat up at 70. So I'm kind of impressed, actually.
I was actually really curious to see what he would look like, because sometimes you have that mental image in your head of the last time you saw that wrestler, and then they come out and you're just thinking, oh boy, time has not been kind. He came out and legitimately impressed. I hope I look that good when I'm that age.
Yeah, you made me think of like Honky Tonk at the last Hall of Fame ceremony. He came out and I was like, oh dear Lord. That's the Honky Tonk, I guess. I suppose it has been 35 years since I saw him. So
I had the quote unquote privilege of watching him wrestle at a local wrestling promotion about 20 years ago. We're talking, there might have been a couple hundred people there, and you're excited because Honky Tonk's there and Abdullah the Butcher, and they walk out and you're thinking, oh boy, you are here for the payday. That is why you are here.
You're like, this is why they have YouTube. I'm supposed to be watching their old matches on YouTube,
right?
Not watching this one. Sometimes the nostalgia gets killed by the reality. It does happen. Mm-hmm. So Collision's been, lots of lead up for, of course, the biggest. They call it the biggest pay-per-view of all time. I'll say it's the biggest ticket sales of all time. These wrestling companies love to overhype all their shows. And yes, huge show. But, the card, it's a good card. It's a solid pay-per-view card. But let's settle down. It's not changing. We're not inventing the wheel here. It's a really solid-looking wrestling card. But it's the biggest of all time. I love it. And the WrestleMania, that same weekend that they were having All In, they were selling the tickets for WrestleMania so they could say, we just sold 90,000 tickets. I'm like, oh, you guys, just get your measuring tapes out and undo your flies and get it over with.
Yeah, exactly.
Anything else from Collision that you want to talk about before we talk about All In? Because both shows were kind of just setting up the matches we were going to see.
Right.
The Samoa Joe CM Punk kind of came out of nowhere, but that's fine. It was a way to set up a title match. They had a previous history. They were able to smoosh that story in pretty quick. That I didn't have a problem with that. It's really all about the main event, right? That's kind of like Hogan and Andre. Everyone's talking about MJF and Adam Cole, and there's lots of great matches, but that's the one that everyone's just salivating to get to. And they had some good appearances, though. They're just fun together, those two. I didn't think this was going to work at all, and it works so well that they might just have to never let them break up. I was sure they're going to break up, but no, maybe just keep them together.
it was a super fun build to London, and like you said, every match was really just the build to the payoff in London, whether that was FTR, who ended up, against the Young Bucks and whatnot. But the only additional thing I would mention was, I just find it really fascinating, the World Trios Championship, how they have that little wrinkle, the house rules.
Oh, yeah.
I find that really fascinating, how essentially the challenger has that list of things that they can pick from that gives them kind of an advantage, whether it's kicking out the manager, whether it's a no holds barred match or whatever. So I find that really fascinating. That's an interesting wrinkle that I'm not familiar with, just getting used to the AEW brand and everything. But
I thought that was really cool too.
Of course, that played a part in London too, but like you said, Collision, just such a fun show. And I thought the build to London was done really, really well. It made me legitimately interested in seeing the show.
Me too. The only match I was just thinking that I wanted to comment on quick, it was the last Collision before All In, had Christian Cage against Darby Allin. And it was Christian doesn't wrestle as much as he used to, because he's almost 50, but he can still go. He can still go in a well-scripted match. That match, Darby Allin is trying to kill himself, and he's apparently going to do it for our amusement, because good Lord, in that match, he did that drop kick off the top rope to the floor when Christian was in that chair. I'm if that's supposed to be harder on Christian, you're supposed to be, you're drop kicking him. But the way Darby landed, I was like, oh my God, dude, you're going to kill yourself. The guy is crazy, and I love it, but I also don't want him to die. Don't kill yourself, Darby Allin. I like
he's going to be in worse shape than Mick Foley by the time his career's done. Because he similar trajectory. He just doesn't give two shits about his own well being. He just whatever it takes for the show.
Oof.
And yeah, as a fan, I appreciate it, but as a fellow human being, like you said, I have concerns.
Yeah. So yeah. So that was a great match, and it led to. I wasn't sure if I was going to even get to watch All In because it's like it's this huge pay-per-view. I'm like, am I going to get a chance to find the time to watch it? But I'm so glad I did because, yeah, overall, like it wasn't a perfect show, but it was a banger. There was a lot of good in that show that I really enjoyed. And if things weren't perfect, well, it's a wrestling show. So there's times to go to the bathroom. You can go have a pee. You can go get a drink. You don't like I don't remember ever watching a wrestling show where every single match I thought was amazing. I don't think that's ever happened. There's always like they got to get everyone in there, and not every story is perfect. But like there wasn't botches, and there wasn't a lot of bad execution. And the crowd, like first, I guess you have to start there. The Brits are insane, so that crowd was bananas. And isn't there something magical about daytime wrestling? It's this weird thing I can't describe, but you don't see it very much. And when you watch wrestling under the sun, I don't know. There's something, and you know, it's going to get dark at some point. The main event's going to be in darkness. Like, I don't know. It's weird. It's fascinating. I don't want to watch it all the time, but every once in a while, it's really cool to have like half the show in that weird lighting.
Yeah. Have that novelty. I agree. Cause I haven't seen a lot of it, but exactly that, how it's an open roof in Wembley. Oh, they're legit outside. Oh, that's cool. Lucky it's not raining in England.
Right. It's always a risk with those shows, and it does rain. Like I've watched many a WWE pay-per-view where it's pouring rain on the people. So it's a giant risk, but you just take it.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it really set the tone in the atmosphere. And yeah, that crowd, like you mentioned Canadians are nuts. Brits are nuts too, in their own special way. And we love you,
Britain.
Oh my
God. Oh, those football chants they do, but switch it all to wrestling. And like, I don't know that that's a show I would want to be at, because the sight lines there were so many people, and I saw so many photos online of what your view was. And I'm like, wow, like the ring is small. I'm like, wait, that's not the ring. That's that giant structure over top of the ring. And it was small. I'm like, oh man, I can't even see the ring. You know, but I'm glad those people were there, and I'm glad they had a great time.
At that point, you're just there to say you're there. You're watching the show on the video screen, and hey, you can feed off the energy of everybody around you, and you can still have a hell of a good time.
And you can say you were there.
Way too cheap to pay for it.
Oh, hell yeah. to spend all that money to not see it. It's like, no, I don't think so. To not see the opening match, which was, of course, CM Punk had to start the show.
Of course.
It was the crowd really was into CM Punk. I was surprised. I didn't know if the Brits liked him. They sure did. And, you know, the match was okay. It was maybe the weakest match of the night for me, because I didn't find the story very intriguing as the match went. I thought Samoa Joe was good. I always love Samoa Joe. CM Punk just seems so slow. I'm not enjoying anything he does in the ring. I find it just, he looks like he's just trying to keep up, and he's good at reacting to the crowd. He's good at getting people out of their seats with his face, but I don't find his wrestling interesting at all anymore. And that match was fine. Color in the first match seemed a little strange. I saw when Punk hit the table, and then he disappeared. I was like, is he busting himself open right now? He came out covered in blood. Yeah. I'm like, wow, first match color. Huh? Like AEW is obsessed with color. Like they love having blood in matches. I think they overdo it a little, because it gets a little redundant. I've said that before, but you know, whatever, that was fine. They wanted to start with a bang, and that's how you start with a bang. So the match was decent. I was hoping that Samoa Joe was going to win, even though I knew that he wouldn't. So
exactly. You're right. Like CM Punk, he just seems like he feeds off the emotion and energy of the crowd, and I guess he's a good opening act if he's not the main event, because the crowd at least is going to be 50-50, so they're going to be invested one way or another. They're either going to be cheering for him or against him, so it's not just a match where, you know, people are getting to their seats and they don't care if they miss the match. This is legit a match where they're probably rushing to their seats because they want to see Samoa Joe beat the piss out of CM Punk.
Right.
Or they're hoping.
Yeah, yeah. So that match led into the trios match, which, you know, those type of matches, if it's not for the titles, I find that they get a little messy. And so that one, it was Bullet Club versus Omega and his group. And so lots of great wrestlers in there, but I was a little disappointed that that was Kenny Omega's all-in match.
Yeah.
I would like to have seen him like in an actual featured match because he's so talented. So in that match, I don't think he got to display himself that well. Like, it was fine, but that match was, you know, it's all over the place. They threw Don Callis on commentary and I was like, oh, don't make me listen to this guy. I can't stand Don Callis. So that was a little painful. The finish was okay. There was a roll-up finish. That match was okay. I don't have tons of notes on it because it was a trios match. There was lots of spots. If you were live, I think that match is a little more spectacular than on TV. So that's my take. It was fine. Yeah. That match was okay. A little busy for me, but it was fine.
Yeah, and I agree. That was one that I was not really paying 100% attention to. Like, you know, interested enough in Bullet Club, especially seeing Switchblade Jay White in London, right? Like,
In
his home country and stuff. But I'm not super invested in that faction aside from him. And yeah, I like Kenny Omega as far as his reputation, but exactly that. Like, it's six people in the ring, and I only really cared about two of them. So,
right. Yeah, I was maybe a singles match between those two guys, yeah. Right? Jay White, Kenny Omega. That would have been a match that I'd want to see. So,
yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I was not invested in that at all. So.
Especially when you know that FTR and the Young Bucks is up next. So I'm well publicized as not being a fan of the Young Bucks, but that doesn't mean I don't want to watch them in a match for 25 minutes against FTR at all. Yes. Because wow, that match was awesome. I had a blast watching that. And I didn't know the whole FTR, the fuck the revival name. That's amazing that that's what their name is. That FTR stands for Fuck the Revival. That was
is that what it stands for?
Yeah, they did that. They showed that little vignette before the match that was explaining. It was like the history of their rivalry and the Young Bucks saying. So when the Revival was in, or when FTR was in WWE, they were called the Revival.
Yeah,
and when they formed AEW, the Young Bucks, they were like Fuck the Revival, haha, FTR, you guys. So when they came over, they took the name FTR. So they're basically like, it's their own name. Fuck the Revival as their name. I think it's great. I love it. I think that's so funny. Yeah, that's so self-deprecating and amazing. And yeah, so I love that's that team funny even
because
more.
Because I looked that up not that long ago, wondering what the hell does FTR stand for? And it,
there you go.
What I had read, and obviously has been disproven, is that the speculation was that it was forever the Revival because they were the Revival and they couldn't take that name with them, so they pivoted to Forever the Revival. But I like your version better.
Yeah, hey, it's their version. It was awesome. I'll send
you
that.
How I missed that little
if I can find that little it's a little vignette. Yeah, if I find it, I'll send it to you. So
yeah,
so it's funny with FTR. I have a love-hate relationship with their music. Sometimes they come out and that weird disco shit comes on and I'm like, ugh. Like, sometimes I really hate that music. But sometimes I start bopping to it. And I'm like, okay, they got me this time. So unfortunately at All In, I was like, oh, fuck that music. So, but it's back and forth. I never know which Collier is going to be ready for the music on that day. So
I dig it every day. And maybe part of that is that I've seen it live. So it's just in my bones now. I don't know. It's just kind of that funky little low groove that I'm like, all right, we know a good match is coming up.
So. Hey man, I can dig it. I can dig it. No, that was a great match. I enjoyed the hell out of it. Lots of spots. I can't remember any specific because they just do so many. But it was lots of throwbacks to old wrestling and lots of throwbacks to like Bret Hart and the Bulldogs and the Hart Foundation. And just like, it's crazy. So I do like that about the Young Bucks. I really like the Young Bucks. Their love of old wrestling, their love of paying tributes to people. They love to honor other teams by doing the moves and stuff. So I do like that. I just don't. Their gimmick is supposed to annoy me, and it really does. But it really does. But I also love FTR so much. So that match was a banger, and I loved it.
Yeah, so. Me too. And I was curious if there might have been a title change because of certain legal issues with.
I was wondering the same.
But I'm glad that that isn't the case, because I thought, okay, are they going to pivot and just strap it on the Bucks until they find their next? But I'm glad that didn't happen, because like you, huge FTR fans. So.
Yeah. All right. So that brought us to my first, my only note for the next match is skip. So the Stadium Stampede match, I had zero interest in. Yeah. I'm not a deathmatch guy. I'm kind of, you know, 20 years ago, I was into that kind of stuff. I'm not into it anymore. The gross out factor. It's fun when you're younger. I'll give that wrestling match to the youngins. They'll have a good time. Us 50-year-olds. I'm like, I heard about it. And also, you know, I don't like Moxley either, and he loves getting as gross as possible. So I just clicked skip and I didn't watch a moment of it. So if you have any takes on it, it'll have to be all you, man, because I watched zero of that match.
I fast forwarded through a lot of it because, as is well documented here, I just find it impossible to follow these massive like Royal Rumbles and you know, you got so many people in the ring. Well, what do? Well, then you have a bunch of people spread throughout Wembley Stadium and it's like, how do you possibly follow anything that's going on?
Right.
I was curious to see, because I'm a huge, huge, huge Eddie Kingston mark.
Yeah.
So I was curious to see. Well, and he is not afraid of getting bloody and getting down and dirty, obviously.
Totally.
But aside from him, I mean, I like Orange Cassidy the little bit I've seen him. I don't know enough about John Moxley, so there really wasn't a lot of investment factor in this. So I kept fast forwarding to see. Oh, no, it's still going.
It's still going.
No. Now this guy's bloody. Oh, okay. Now there's this horrific spot. So yeah, it's just not my jam. And I know my one buddy, Ivan, he probably ate this up, and it's just, I don't know. It's just not my kind of match. So yeah, I would second that skip.
Yeah. Notion. It was an easy, it saved me whatever 20 minutes of my viewing time. So
it was a half hour.
There you go. Half hour. And I'm glad others out there enjoyed it. It led us into, I did feel bad that they stuck the women's match after that chaotic disaster, but yes. That was actually a really fun match. It was great having the Knight family down there in the front row. Yeah. That was really cool. Have you seen that documentary yet? I can't remember if you watched that yet.
I haven't. It's on my list. I really want to.
It's so good.
Holy cow. What an entrance.
Well, it's basically the home field advantage, right? You got Saray coming out with not just her family, but like the entire crowd is there to cheer for her. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. That entrance was amazing.
Yeah. Coming out to We Will Rock You by Queen. Like how iconic.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, that four-way match, they can be clunky sometimes. That one wasn't. I thought they did a great job of just having the spots spiral from one to the next. There was lots of times when it was three of them involved, so, and some bumps, like that one Toni Storm, her face off the mat when she was in that stretch move and then she stomped her head down. There's no faking that. I was like, that's just gonna be a headache later. That's all that is. Damn. There's
some of these spots they either legit take or they're really good at selling. Cause there was a couple spots in this that I just kind of, you know, you grit your teeth and you kind of sit back in your chair and go, ooh.
Yeah. Wait for them to take a breath and you go, okay, they're breathing. Okay. They stood up. Okay, good. They're up. Okay. Yeah. Good. It was fun to see the dentist in action. I haven't seen a lot of Britt Baker. I've heard great things about the crazy dentist. And one of the first things I see her do is in like a camel clutch kind of move going after the person's teeth. I'm like, she's the dentist going after teeth. That is so great. Like, I loved that. What a great moment.
Yep.
Whoever wrote that, it's a genius. I loved it. So
yeah,
it was excellent. Great finish. The insane pop, like the finish of that match, Saraya winning the title, you know, in front of her family, having them come into the ring. It was just, that was excellent. I thought the match could have been a little longer since it was the only women's match. It was only about 12 minutes. It could have been 25 minutes for those four girls, but excellent match. I still thought it was a banger.
Yeah, I agree. It didn't overstay its welcome. Would have been nice if it had lasted a little bit longer, but no complaints. I mean, they nailed it. The crowd reaction and just seeing how much it meant to her to win on home soil and overcoming injuries that she's had in her past. And that was a great, great, great moment.
That took us into the coffin match, which just seemed like an excuse to try to kill to try to kill poor Darby Allin again. It just seems like that's the mission of this company, is to kill that guy. So
I think it's his mission. I don't even think it's I think AEW is just okay with his mission to kill himself.
So, you know, that match wasn't amazing. It just was enjoyable. I liked it. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, I could take it or leave it as far as like rewatching it. I probably won't, but it was fun to watch, just to see a couple of those bumps that he took off the top there when he basically just bounced off a steel coffin. I'm like, there's no good way to do that. There's not even a nice way to do that. That's just bad. It's terrible for you.
Well, yeah, there was the one spot where he landed his spine on the edge of the ring.
Yeah.
And knowing how that's just you hit that wrong, it ends your career. Like, it ended Rick Rude's career.
Oh yeah.
Landing on an uneven floor. And you see that, and yeah, that's another one where you just grit your teeth and hope they're okay.
Yeah, so good match, nutty. The thumbtack hoodies was stupid. I don't, the AEW just like, we gotta have a weird weapon thing in every match. Like, I thought the thumbtack hoodie was kind of dumb, but whatever. And Sting is fine. I'm trying to wonder if I ever liked him. Like, I think that it's like the idea of Sting I liked. I liked the makeup and the, when he was in NWA or WCW, he would come down from the, I like all of the,
that's the crow Sting, the
theatrics of it. But in the ring, I don't know that I ever liked him as a wrestler. I don't know that I like his style very much. It's not particularly interesting. So
I liked him back in the day. I think he is, well, like any of these aging wrestlers, right? But he can't move like he used to.
No.
I mean, we're talking about CM Punk being stiff. I mean, Stinger's a little bit more rigid.
A little bit more, yeah. So, but that's, yeah.
He's fine. He fills the niche role well for what they ask him to do, I think.
Now, you want to talk about an aging guy that doesn't look stiff? And that doesn't seem to struggle in there, and that for some reason just I always pop for every single time, is that Chris Jericho.
Oh, yeah, baby.
That motherfucker comes out with one of the best entrances I've seen at a pay-per-view in a long time.
Yes.
Singing, basically being Freddie Mercury, except singing badly. And they were singing the Fozzy way, basically. And just, oh, it was so good. It was like, it was so amazing because the crowd was cheering, but also you could see they were also like, hey, wait a minute.
Well, because they usually do sing his song Judas as he comes in, right?
Oh, yeah.
He just walks, but then exactly that. I think it's that epiphany of, oh wait, he's actually legit singing this. Oh wait, Fozzy's on the stage playing him in. Oh yep. Wait, this is next level.
Jericho knows how to play a crowd. So that was an excellent intro. So this is my match of the night, actually. So I was really looking forward to it because I wanted to see Will Ospreay. But I was nervous about it because Jericho, didn't think he would be able to keep up. And he kept up. It wasn't even that Ospreay slowed down. I actually thought that I didn't even really notice it or think about it the whole time, which when you're talking about these older wrestlers is almost impossible to not for a second go, wow, ooh, careful, old guy. I never thought it for a second. They had it well scripted so that it wasn't, he never looked like he was running quickly to catch up or and struggling to catch him or no, every move was like what he Chris Jericho is great at pacing a match. He's an old school Bret Hart dungeon kind of guy. He likes to slow it down. He likes to react to the crowd between moves. And there's not enough of that nowadays. Just taking the speed of the match and just almost grind it to a halt and get the crowd invested. That's still part of the match. Even if nothing's happening in the match.
Get those reaction moments.
Yeah.
Pull the audience into the ring.
Drag it and milk it as long as you can. And boy, does he do that well. So that match, awesome. I don't have anything bad about it. It was fantastic. It was easily my match of the night. I enjoyed it so much because of the surprise, because I didn't think it was going to be that good. So
yeah, I agree. I'm a Jericho fan from back in the day. And yeah, just recently at Forbidden Door, finally seeing Will Ospreay and kind of seeing, okay, yeah, his reputation is legit. I see why people like him. And maybe I'm a little dumb. I had no idea he was English. I don't know where I thought he was from.
Well, if you haven't
apparently he's English.
If you never heard of a guy's promo, then why would you? You have no idea, right? Osprey, yeah. I don't know that name, right? I've never heard it before. So as far as regional,
maybe thought he was like Australian or something, but yeah, clearly not.
No,
but yeah, so great, so great. And yeah, Jericho definitely knows how to elevate his game and work the crowd. And yeah, this was a banger, absolutely, front to back.
Awesome match. It led into kind of almost a skippable match for me. I watched it, but then I kind of regretted it. Just I love House of Black so much. So it started great because their entrance was amazing. Absolutely amazing. Doing the Bray Wyatt tribute because, God, we didn't even talk about that. The week of wrestling that was with the two sad passings, Terry Funk and Bray Wyatt. We won't bring it down, but to have them come out and do that tribute was amazing. The fireflies all throughout the crowd, the lights were everywhere, and they're wearing white instead of black, and their music is so badass. So great start. I'm not really down with the Acclaimed. I don't really care about the Acclaimed. I keep trying to why should I care about this team? And I just don't. So, and that match was, I don't know, it was a little boring.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was that. It didn't really seem to go off of the strengths of the House of Black. I found like theirs is the power game and the big, big impact pops. And I just, I don't know, it just, there's something. And then the title change, I was like, oh, boo. So. Yeah.
And I really try not to be an echo chamber with your opinions, but I share that with you. I like that. Well, it's weird because the Acclaim seem like they're such a big deal, right? Like they come into the, into the arena and everybody's like, they bring a great energy. And you talk about working a crowd. They know how to work the crowd and they're wrapping their intro and bringing in, you know, elements of where they're from, bringing lines into the rap and everything. And I appreciate that. I think that's great.
Their entrance is great. Yeah.
But then they start wrestling and that's when they lose me. Cause I'm like, okay, they're fine as like a mid card tag team, but I will be honest. I didn't think there was a chance in hell that they would win the titles.
Me neither. It tells me they have plans for House of Black, right? They must have plans for members of House of Black to do something else. And they needed to get because the trio title kind of, it that's what you are. It kind of weighs you down because you have to have these big matches all the time, these big six-man matches. So if they want one or two or three of those members to do different things, they got to get the belts off them, right? So
yeah. And actually, I learned something really interesting this week that, I mean, it goes part and parcel with learning a new brand. And even though you love this stable, you're still learning things. House of Black is when it's three of them. Because I was so confused. I'm like, but what about Kings of the Blackthorn? Yeah, that's when there's two of them. They go by two different monikers.
See, I didn't even know that. I didn't know that at all. I just learned things too.
There you go. So yeah, I just learned that this week and it blew my mind.
We have a wrestling podcast.
True. We do watch it, but we're new. Educate us. We're willing to learn.
Learned.
But I hope they have big plans for House of Black, Kings of the Black Throne, because damn, they've got a presence. They have the crowd eating out of their hands.
I know.
And they can all wrestle. Like every member of that faction can wrestle and brings a different style. So I don't know. To me, they're just more interesting, I guess. But I mean, I am a little partial because of, you know, the black metal.
I agree completely, and I think that they are more interesting than a trios tag champion, so that's why I'm glad they dropped the titles. I just was surprised it was the Acclaimed, but people seem to love those guys, so good, enjoy them, and we will enjoy the House of Black.
Exactly.
And also Billy Gunn not being retired was odd because he retired, so
yeah. And
it's like, why did they go through the whole ceremony of having him take his boots off and stuff if he was just going to come back like a week later? I don't really understand why they did all that.
Maybe I missed it, but did they ever explain what Malachi Black whispered in his ear?
No.
Because apparently...
maybe on Dynamite or something. I didn't see it.
Yeah, because apparently that was one of the reasons he might have come back or something. Mm. I was waiting for that reveal, And I don't know if they did say it, I missed it because I was waiting for this big moment of, well, I came back because whatever, and it just never came. But yeah, I thought it was a little odd for him to unretire for the match.
And, well, that's like the fastest unretirement ever, like that I've ever seen. So
yeah,
because he's back, like he's not retired now, he's like back. So
he's back weird. Scissoring people.
Yeah, that gimmick is really dumb. But people seem to like it.
It's fun when you're there. I kind of fed off the energy of it. I'm like, it just is kind of a silly, goofy gimmick, whatever.
On TV, it's stupid. I'll be honest, I think it's really stupid. But that's
I'm not going to argue with you there.
That's fine. That led us to the main event, which was the whole point of the show, really. Most people agree was to see what was going to happen with the best of friends, the best of buddies, the Ring of Honor tag champions, which was like, that surprised me. Yeah. I was very surprised that happened. I guess that was in the pre-show or the night before show or whatever they called it. Yeah. So
yeah,
I didn't watch Zero Hour, but I was surprised there was a major title change on the Zero Hour. So, but interesting to have them become tag champs. That's a neat little twist on their story. Very complicated little story they got going there with those two. That match was awesome. It was like almost overplayed on purpose. So the way the two of them were playing their theatrical responses to each other was way overdone on purpose. You're in an arena with 80,000 people, right? So you need to sell this to the back row of the biggest stadium in Britain. So I found that like that didn't bother me. I actually got why they were, because they were way more animated than they usually would be with some of their spots. And I think they were trying to show like to be as big as they could be and also get across all the emotions they were trying to get across. It was very effective. It was very, I don't want to insult it by saying paint by numbers, but it was a very paint by numbers conflict they were having. You could sort of, it wasn't unpredictable. Like there wasn't surprises in the match, but I still found it was endearing. The heart was, the core of the story was there. And I felt what they were doing. It was good. It was a really good match.
I like the way it unfolded you knew at some point the friendship would have to be paused and they'd have to have the legit match. I would say, you know, on this podcast, we've criticized AEW for their lack of storytelling, how it's more go, go, go action, which is fine. I love that. But I do appreciate when you bring story elements into it. And I found out of all of them, this, because of that overplaying reactions, that really did bring more story elements into it. And it really, I thought, told that story effectively, and that's something that we don't necessarily see enough of, in my opinion. You don't see the story played out in match nearly as much as what you've commented on about WWE doing so effectively. So
yeah,
I thought that was really good. And not every match is there to be a surprise ending, so you kind of had an idea how this may or may not play out. But it was a super fun match, and I really, yeah, I was on board for the ride, and yeah, it was a fun match.
Yeah, it was. It ended. Yeah, I didn't think MJF was going to lose the title, so it didn't really have me like each false finish wasn't like, oh, I was like, okay, I was just curious how they were going to wrap it up. Every time they were going to hit each other illegally to cheat when they had the opportunity, and then they didn't. That, if with the wrong people, that could have come across as really cheesy, but they both managed to like sell it in a way that, basically, they were good actors. They sold me on the moment they were conflicted and, oh, no, I'm not going to cheat. And they throw the title down. Like, even though they did it several times, I still enjoyed it each time. And Adam Cole really sold his disappointment at the end, his frustration when he threw the Ring of Honor title out of the ring after he had lost. It seemed very real. I was very invested in that moment. So, and the crowd, they loved it. It was a perfect way to end the pay-per-view. So,
yep. I agree. Ended it on an upswing. So, yeah, and I agree with you. Overall, the card might have had a few matches that you could have skipped and gone to the bathroom and waited in the beer line for. But, I mean, 80% of a card like this being really good, how can you complain about that?
100%. And it's like, you know, they're saying like the greatest, you know, greatest wrestling event of all time. Well, this year's WrestleMania, I would say was as good a pay-per-view as this one. So isn't that good that we get two amazing pay-per-views in the same year? It's fair to compare them since they're completely different products. They both put on great shows. There's going to be another All In next year that will have 80,000 people. There'll be another WrestleMania next year that's two nights and 100 and whatever thousand. I don't care about the numbers of people in the stands. There could be 500 people in a small arena. Just do a good show. Have good matches, and that's what that pay-per-view was. It was really good. I will watch All In again next year. So,
yep, and I'm super stoked that they're going back to London for it. They've already announced that it's going to be in London again, and I think that is super fun. And it'd be neat if it just was in London every year, or move it around once the brand expands, have it in Germany or whatever other venue. But all in all, super, super solid and really, really fun.
Yeah, agreed.
No complaints here.
Yeah. All right. So for a push this week, I got to go Christian Cage with one of mine because he's just been making me laugh so much, coming out in his turtlenecks and just, you know, holding the title and saying it's his and just everything he did, the swarmy look on his face. He's making me laugh. And then he takes the shirt off, jumps in the ring against a much younger guy. And I couldn't tell for a second that he doesn't wrestle every week. He looked fantastic. So Christian Cage doing a wonderful job for AEW. And we haven't talked WWE at all, but my other push is going to Trish Stratus and Becky Lynch for having probably my match of the year so far for 2023. Wow. The cage match that opened Payback was absolutely incredible. One of the best cage matches I've ever seen for just watching two performers beat the hell out of each other. And I know they always do that in wrestling matches, but no, seriously, you saw that picture of Trish. Like, holy crap. Like, it's kind of, cage matches have been this funny thing. Like in the old days of cage matches, getting slammed into the cage somehow busts your face open. And that doesn't really make any sense. I've hit a chain link fence before. It doesn't feel good, but it's not razor wire, right? So this match, they legit were like, Trish was getting her face slammed. You could see it. And we were like, oh my God, like you watch the welt forming in her head. And we were like, I've never even seen a male wrestler take that. I've never seen that before. So hats off to them. She got suplexed off the top of the cage. There was just, it was crazy. So yeah, that was my match of the year so far, as far as just getting me out of my seat and just popping over and over. And I was just in disbelief that they didn't kill each other. It was absolutely incredible. So cheers to those two. That's my big push for the week. What do you got?
Nice. For me, it's actually somebody that I intended to mention when we were talking about me seeing the AEW live show and just slipped my mind, but he was on a recent episode of Collision, and just, I love the energy he brings, and he's got this flair and flamboyance. Dalton Castle, he comes out.
Dalton Castle, yeah. Total,
like, he's got this really energetic music, and he's got his entourage of guys that, you know, they've got the peacock feathers. He kind of looks like an athletic Jack Black, but he's really good, and he just has this really awesome energy about him. And when we saw him here, my wife and my buddy's wife just out of their seats were popping for this guy, saying next wrestling event we go to, they're going to cosplay as Dalton Castle. So yeah, just, I love seeing these kind of indie or younger wrestlers kind of making their name for themselves, because of course you've got the CM Punks, you've got the Stings, you've got, you know, you've got these established stars, which is great, but I love seeing the new blood coming up and really getting that toehold quickly. Like, I apparently he was the TNT heavyweight champion for a while. Was,
yeah, that's what they said. Yeah,
so I'm glad he's getting his break in AEW, and I hope he lasts a while, because yeah, he just brings a super, super fun energy.
And now whenever I see him, I'm going to think he's Jack Black's younger, more athletic brother. So thanks for that. That's great.
You're welcome.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, you're right. I forgot about him. I was going to put him down as one of my pushes and then completely forgot. So because I think I forgot his name, to be honest with you. That was the first time I ever saw him. So he was great.
Yeah.
Is that your only push?
I've only got the one push. That's good enough for me.
So tapping out, I always do this. I always end up tapping out during the episode. And then at the end, I just go, remember those things I complained about earlier? So my tap outs are the same as always. JR on commentary, I just don't need it anymore. I don't need listening to this old guy sound like an old guy. He's so out of date with what's going on. He's talking like he's wrestling in 1982. I've had enough of JR on commentary. Love you, JR, but I don't need you in 2023. And the booking of AEW's women division. There's too many good women on that promotion to not be getting multiple matches per show. So I'm going to keep saying it until they get more. Until, like, especially, you know, we watch a WWE pay-per-view and it opens with this incredible women's match. And then one of the other bangers of the night was the other women's match, which was Rhea Ripley and Raquel Rodriguez. So just having two matches a night is not rocket science here. So,
and there's tons of talent out there. Like, yeah. there's honestly, there's no excuse for it.
Well, they keep doing six women tag matches. So take that six and divide it into two matches or. Come on, that's easy math there. So
yeah, it is.
Anyway, that's my tap outs. What do you got?
My tap out is we've been kind of dancing around this subject all episode. It's finally time to talk about the CM Punk of it all. Like, what a fucking idiot.
Na 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 na. Goodbye. I had to sing it at some point, being a Canadian kid who loves hockey and also hates CM Punk. So
yeah. I mean, it just seemed like it was a ticking time clock from the moment he came back. Like I said earlier, just knowing that he isn't the most well-liked guy behind stage and he just causes shit and likes to cause shit, that there was heat, I was really wondered how legit the heat was. Like, it felt more real than just I don't like you, I want your title. It seemed like you're an asshole, I want to beat you.
Yeah.
So, and you've done more research on it, you've been a long time watcher of his career, so you can speak to that more than me. But just what an idiot to throw away an opportunity to resurrect his career. He had good momentum, he had a lot of things going for him, and just can't stay out of the mess.
He had every crowd chanting his name, every building he walked into. Come on, man. Mm-hmm. I listened to two podcasts today. I listened to the We Watch Wrestling podcast with Maddie and Vince that we love. And I listened to Wrestling with Freddie Prinze Jr. It's a great podcast. And both of them worked for WWE. Both of them worked at the time of CM Punk. And he was a dick to both of them. And they didn't talk about it until after he got fired. And now they're both just like, I'm going to share this story. And I'm like, God damn, he is just a dick to everyone. Like, he portrays this other image when he's the clean and, you know, this great guy. And I've seen lots of videos with him and kids and stuff. It's like, yeah, bullshit. This is all politicians kissing babies, man.
It's a work.
It's a work. It is. Because we know the real you clearly is the guy that attacks. Apparently, Tony Khan got monitors dumped on him at All In. That's why he felt his life was in danger. Yeah, like the Rumble, actually, Margot was telling me this earlier, that monitors fell on Tony Khan and he could have got injured. So just like, God damn, what the hell? This is the biggest show in the history of wrestling as far as attendance goes. The biggest show your company has ever had, and you pull that crap? Mm-hmm. Like, I knew he was fired as soon as I heard there was the backstage incident. I'm like, oh yeah, someone's getting fired, because this is like, you don't have a fight at WrestleMania. You do not. Like, with that WrestleMania 3, that story of Hacksaw Jim Duggan and Iron Sheik blowing kayfabe. And what happened? They got fired that night. Like, that night, Vince called him, like, you guys are both
big
fired.
Big stars.
This is WrestleMania day and you did this, you're both fired. You know, two of your biggest stars. So I couldn't believe CM Punk. Well, you know what? That's a lie. I totally can believe it.
I was going to say, of anybody, you totally could.
Fucking guy.
But yeah. Yeah, just...
But yay!
What a waste. Yeah.
He's good. So, yeah. How many weeks in a row have I been complaining and tapping out on that guy? So
ever since we started watching Collision.
Uh-huh. So...
Yeah. So, yeah, that's my tap out, is CM Punk tapping out and vamoosing.
Okay, well, it's time to wrap things up. Huge thanks to all the listeners that joined us this week. Don't forget to subscribe and download the episode in your podcast app of choice. Every little bit helps us. Spotify users, you can now interact directly with the podcast in-app, as we add Q&As and polls for every episode, so check those out. And we even try and read out your responses, so let us have them. And you can now reach the podcast on Instagram at MurderGymnasticsPod. I try and post daily, so pop on over for fun memes, pics, and videos. And of course, Paul, if people got nothing going on, what should they do?
go watch some wrestling. Yeah.